You're listening to episode 18 of the Talentopoly podcast, where we discuss some of the best links posted on talentopoly.com each week. I'm your host, Jared Brown, and I'm joined by
me, Steve Dixon,
and me, Brandon Corbin.
Ah, Brandon, why do you sell yourself so short there?
William Brandon Corbin the sixth.
I like it. Nice.
And that's true.
Really?
Yes.
That is awesome.
I know.
Wow.
I know. And Eat My Son is the seventh.
Keeping it alive.
That's right, baby.
All right. So that's why awesome. So now I understand why you drink wine all the time. This makes a lot more sense now.
We're a highbrow.
You are.
Kind of family. Not really. We're like Neanderthals. I mean, we're this
Sauvignon.
Yes, Sauvignon.
Sauvignon.
What are you drinking tonight, Brandon?
I am drinking the 337, and it's a Cabernet, and it's really good. I don't know where I got it from. Can't remember.
CVS probably.
No. This was a little more expensive, and I will never buy wine from CVS again. But yeah, it's a good wine.
Nice.
Highly recommended. Not really. Maybe like a six again.
What if I send you a wine in a box? Would you drink that during the podcast?
Absolutely.
Sweet. Consider it done. In a future podcast, I will deliver it to you, wine in a box.
And here's the thing. If we have any wine listeners or wine makers, you know, feel free to send them to Jared, and then he can send them to me.
Oh,
or
absolutely.
You could send them to me directly,
yep.
And I will drink them and give them the rate of 1 to 10, which they all end up being about a 6. And
you can find Brandon on Twitter. Just let him know you want to send him some wine, and we will plug the heck out of it.
Yes, Brandon Corbin.
There you go. What are you drinking, Steven?
Perfectly enlightening, potentially super intelligent, and that's an acronym for Pepsi. Boom!
Wow.
No, I'm drinking sugar water. I was drinking Tropicana before, but you drank me. Well, you made me all thirsty, so I drank it all up.
He's such an Apple fanboy that he even drinks Pepsi.
Wouldn't you not drink Pepsi though? Because the Scully connection. Doesn't it seem like you wouldn't?
No, because again, he was part of Apple.
Right, but during the dark days.
Hey, we all had to go through it.
I didn't. I was not using Apple products during that time.
I don't really drink. Well, see, the thing is, I'm looking at my fridge here. I can either drink milk or water, or there's no beers in the fridge.
Steven, I have a question for you.
Yeah?
Do you want to sell sugar water for the rest of your life, or do you want to change the world?
I already am changing the world.
All right, let's get into a
what are you drinking?
Oh, right. I am drinking...
He's not drinking anything. He's selling us all out.
No,
so he's making fun of me because I'm drinking Pepsi.
No, I'm on the second bottle of this beer my wife picked up for me tonight. It's called In Heat Wheat. It's a Hefeweizen.
That was a hint, by the way.
Yeah, In Heat Wheat.
Wink, wink.
So, and it's by Flying Dog, which, yeah, cool name for a beer company.
It's a bitch beer.
But yeah, hopefully that's a hint for something. That'd be nice.
So all basically, right. if it's a female dog, then it'd be Flying Bitch Beer.
There you go.
Boom.
All right, let's move on to some of our talking points here. A couple of things we want to talk about before we get into the articles. First thing is, this is a first for our podcast tonight. Every single one of the articles we're going to talk about tonight has been submitted by a Talentopoly member and not by one of the three of us.
Woo!
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
Kind of excited about that. We've had some really great engagement on the site lately and some great posts going up. So thank you to everybody who you will be mentioned during the podcast for the links you have posted. But thank you ahead of time for just posting all these great links. It's appreciated.
You'll be mentioned and loved.
Exactly.
Are you going to mention their Twitter names or...
No, I'm just you can find them. Like if you go to the people tab and you can search them out, or you can just click the link to go to these posts and you'll see they're the author of them, and you can find them that way too. And
brought to you by the closed system of talentopoly.com.
Exactly. So, but if they've chosen to put their Twitter handle up
then
on
you
their
can
profile,
find them.
You can find them. And if not, who am I to expose their Twitter handle?
Boom.
I probably
yeah.
wouldn't know it anyway. So all right, we are going to try to shorten the podcast up Our podcast is a lot of fun to record, and we like talking and hearing ourselves talk. But I think 40 minutes is kind of a sweet spot that we should try to aim for. We're at least going to try to do this. Can't promise anything, but we're trying to bring it down from 70 to 60 minutes is where it kind of has been sitting so far. Bring it down to 40 minutes. So,
and if not, we'll do it in 1 minute.
Yes, that would be amazing.
and there goes 5% of our time.
Yes.
I'm only kidding. That's unofficial.
So we had Raji on the podcast last week, which was awesome having him on. We had some great conversation about user design, user interface design. We talked about how to make icons, a lot of really cool stuff. We do have some other big name guests that will be coming on the podcast in
Mike Tyson
weeks. Yeah, Mike Tyson will be talking about CSS3 transformations. It's gonna be amazing. So we don't have any names to announce at the moment, but just
because they're all secret.
Keep listening, total secret. You'll see as we do each podcast, though. We'll have over the next 2 months. We're gonna have some cool names. So looking forward to that.
Stay tuned.
The final bit of information I want to share, a little bit of news here. The site got a Talentopoly, because we always talk about the articles that are being posted, and that's really great. But I want to really take a moment to just talk about, you know, what we're doing with the website. And we have a great chat feature that we've put on the site, and that's working really well. And the next big thing I'm excited to launch and find out how people use it and if they like it a lot is our monthly online magazine. So what this is going to be is an extension of our weekly emails of the top 10 links. This is going to be more of a, maybe you didn't have time to read through those links each week. You know, I get a lot of newsletters that have all these great links in them, and I don't have time to go through all that. So what I was thinking would be really great is to just get a monthly digest of, here are the things that here's the great stuff you don't want to miss that happened last month. Here's a great tool. Here's a couple of great articles. And it's going to have a very rich magazine look to it. So it will have large photos. It's not going to be like the weekly email. It's going to be a little richer experience than that.
Is it going to be an email?
It will be. And it also will be on the website, I hope. I haven't fully baked this yet, but
this email is basically going to be the reason why you want to open your mail client. Okay.
Definitely.
Sweet.
So look for that. I'm going to try to get the first one out at the end of the month. So that will be hitting your inbox, and there will be a way to
slam my inbox.
And if you don't like it, you can turn it off. Okay. Let's jump into our first article while Steven dies on the podcast.
Slam my inbox.
Article number one, a brief rant on the future of interaction design, posted by Christian Serda Osterlund. That's the best I've got on that. Anybody else have a better pronunciation of that?
No.
Okay, we're going to leave it at that. Sorry if we mispronounce. You send me an email or tweet me, and I'd be happy to learn how to pronounce your name correctly. So, future of interaction design. They've got, I mean, this is a pretty cool article. They have a video on here called Productivity Future Vision, and it's a 6-minute video that goes through some really awesome Minority Report style glass, you know, interfaces where you're swiping stuff around. Think iPhone without the bezel on it and just taking it to the max, where you're moving, you know, everything. You can move things vertically with swipe. It's just moving real slick around. And this is completely conceptual.
Yeah, moving stuff from one device to another.
And like a magazine. There's a magazine version of it. There's like the part. They've got it on a table at one point. You know, they have the little handheld part that's like an iPhone. And it just, you're watching it, and I started like drooling at this. I really, really like this sort of thing. What do you guys think when you saw the video?
Steven, can I go first?
Yes, by all means.
All right. So mine was is that this is watching Victoria's Secret thing that they used to stream online, which they still might do.
It also makes me drool.
Exactly. So. That's all it did. It's a superficial drool. It's like, oh my God, it's this fantasy of what technology can lead us to.
Right.
But then what I'm sure Stephen's going to rant on is that when you actually start really thinking about the actions and how the people were really interacting with the information, it starts to fall on its face. But it was a good, sexy, like superficial, you know, yeah, it gave me a geek hard on. And but then you step back and you realize it's hollow and empty.
And this might have something to do with the surprise ending, which at the very end of this, and I may not
see. Wait, I went into it knowing it. See, because it's not on this. You know, this is the first time it was posted. This was like, you know, them saying, "Hey, this company, I'll let you unveil it." Is future? You know, the future of productivity, and so I knew it going in.
I think I might end up disagreeing with you guys a little bit. I'm going to let Steven give his two cents on it. But so I was pretty excited. I was liking it a lot. And then it gets to the end, and it says produced by Microsoft, and my jaw kind of dropped. Like, wow.
You know, why would it? Courier was frigging beautiful.
It was awesome.
Completely conceptual. But again, it's like until you use it, that's the only way you're going to find out what really works and what doesn't is you have to use the hell out of it. And that's what Microsoft doesn't do.
Agreed.
You know, that's where I think it falls on its face.
And this is also Microsoft Office. It said produce this, which struck me as odd. I would have thought this came out of their research department.
Oh, great. Well, let's wait for the ribbons then. You know, we'll be holding pieces of glass with ribbons tied to them and all that. Oh, I'm doing a copy paste or edit or select all or put in this paragraph and all that stuff. Rant.
So is this rubbish? Is this just a nice video, Steven?
Is this rubbish?
I'm trying to talk your lingo here. I'm trying to talk your language.
Brandon sounded like he was remixing then. Anyway. Okay, so I was watching this.
Yeah, why does it suck? And, tell me why it sucks.
Well, okay, the when I was watching it, it was you know, like you saw the UI and stuff, and I was like, oh, okay. And then, yeah, like I said,
pretty minimal, yeah, clean, and
like I said, before we start recording, at the end it says produced by Microsoft, and I'm thinking, right, okay. And when I was watching it though, my mind did make me I was thinking to myself, a lot of this doesn't really make sense.
Well, one sec, let me just pause you right there and ask, did you know while you were watching the video, before you get to the end, did you know this was Microsoft?
I didn't, but I will tell you this. As soon as I saw the bit at the end, I kind of thought, I've seen something like this similar before of this same style. And whether it definitely wasn't this video, but it was something similar to this, which Microsoft have done in the past, which I've seen.
Well, and be totally honest here. What were you thinking before you saw the Microsoft?
Well, honestly,
were you liking it a little bit? Come on, were you liking this?
I was getting confused with it.
Okay.
And I'm not saying that because, I couldn't care who developed it. But I was getting confused in the fact that the woman was like drawing a heart. You can see in one of the thumbnails, she's drawing a heart above this slab thing she's holding in her hand.
Well, and that, yeah, I didn't get so that what, either, because it's not what, on the slab. It's like
exactly.
Above it.
So, what is sensing that? Is the full thing a camera? None of it's making sense.
Could be using Kinect.
But then, yeah, but there's no cameras on that piece of plastic/glass.
No, so, but here's the thing, guys. That's the thing is it doesn't fucking matter, right? We all have amazing ideas, right? Everybody can come up with amazing ideas, and if we would all sit back and say, okay, what's technology going to be like in 40 years? We could come up with something that's going to be like really frigging amazing. But what it all comes down to is who can execute on it,
right?
And that's where, yes, it's easy to make a movie that people go, oh, my God, that's so sexy, right?
This is like Minority Report taken
exactly.
Further.
I mean, exactly.
Yeah, you can do that.
No, dude, Minority Report was good.
Well, except for your arms are going to go numb, right? So there's the practical side of things that we just don't know until somebody actually executes on it and we can really use it in the real world. Otherwise, it's just a fucking idea.
Right. The thing with this, though, when I was watching it, is there were other things that didn't make sense. Like this one point, this guy looks at a card, like this piece of glass, and then he turns it around, and it all of a sudden changes. And it's like, well, this looks like a piece of glass that's clearly transparent. How is that doing that? There's no technology like that. It's not like, oh, this is what the future's going to look like, because if you rewind back 20 years, the future people thought would be flying around in hover cars and all that business, which is not practical. So
yeah, but you could absolutely see how you could leverage like the glass, the windows that can go dark, right? And you know, so we there are different technologies that you could do. But again, other than maybe being science fiction, right, where we can inspire the future technologist to be like, you know what, I'm going to build that, you know, and that's maybe what it can do as a positive thing. But as far as practically as a practical application, it fails.
Well, here,
the other thing as well.
One sec. I want to make sure we talk about more of like the heart of what's in this article, because the video is just a way to get the conversation started in this article. So the article is actually going through the guy writing the article, whether he likes that whole video or not. What he's saying is that it doesn't seem realistic to think that we're always going to want to use a piece of glass with pictures under it, and we're going to be swiping left and right and moving stuff around. And that he is arguing, and I'd like to get into this for a minute, because I think this is kind of an interesting discussion. He's arguing that we naturally grip things and hold things and hold pens, and he's got a whole bunch of photos later on in his blog post here showing how we interact with real-world items. We don't interact with real-world items in a 2D sense of swiping and in a plane. So he's arguing that that isn't the future. The future, this is just... What that video did was extrapolate.
That's not making sense to me.
Right, and let's get into that. But what he's saying, and this is his argument, just so I make sure I state it for what this guy is trying to say here. He's saying that all this video did was extrapolate our current touchscreen interfaces to the max, and he thinks that that is not the end goal. He doesn't think that we're always going to be using these flat touchscreen devices. He thinks we may be using more 3D devices where you would actually manipulate their interface by orientating them differently or gripping them, that sort of thing. So no. That's total
garbage. No, it's all a matter of time. It's all a matter of time. Right. So his vision is probably 20 years after this one, because you're not going to have, self-constructing nano fucking things, but you might have glass that can be transparent, but then also display solid things. So I think it's all a matter of time, and whoever can predict the time.
We're talking about things that don't exist in technology right now. So.
Yeah, but isn't that the whole point of it?
Right. He's trying to really think outside the box.
Dude, I'm going to start speculating on, have you seen Bicentennial Man, where Robin Williams' character creates those organic organs? Yeah, we're going to have those in the future. We're going to have these little seeds. I've always thought of this as well. I've always thought that in the future we'll have seeds. If your teeth fall out, if somebody's teeth falls out, they'll have seeds they can put in the gum that grows the tooth back. And that's actually being in development now. So, yeah.
See, here's the thing. Those people who think of those, you go patent it. And that's how these people do, is they predict what's going to be happening. Or they don't even predict. They can just kind of tell what's going to be happening in 20 years. They write it down. They get a patent attorney. They put in $30,000 and boom, now they own a patent on it. So there's a lot of money.
The one thing I want to say on this, though, before we move on, is the fact that the whole interaction seemed confusing. For example, when you get an iPad, an iPhone, you know how to use it, basically. You've got to press a button to turn it on. You swipe from left to right to unlock the screen. And then you've got icons on the screen to tap. You know the user experience. There's no thinking to it. And with this...
But undo. Undo is shake the device. Like an Etch-a-Sketch.
Yeah,
so you're actually doing interaction that's not on the 2D glass surface.
Oh, yeah, sure. But the point is the fact that with this, I was seeing this woman and this guy, and I was seeing people doing all sorts of things that you would have an insane amount of issues. If you're integrating this into an enterprise, let's say, or whatever, you're going to be finding this so insanely difficult to teach people this. Well, no, you have to go to this window, and there's no way to get back to a previous window
section. Video? Is this the video, or are we talking about the...
No, I'm talking about the
holding stuff. And
I'm talking about the video here, and it's like you have no idea. There's just no unity with it all. It's just all mismatch. It's like, yeah, sure, I've got this page thing. I can stretch this image here and do this. I can swipe this onto a piece of glass on my wall, and it's like none of it was. It wasn't making sense. And the thing is 'cause what's on the screen and what you're seeing there, the interface is somewhat designed to, is somewhat a pleasing design per se. That's what you're getting
excited by.
You're getting blinded by that. But when this is what I was thinking towards the end. I was thinking, wait, but not. That's quite a lot of this isn't making sense to me, and you know, because obviously I do design, and I'm just thinking, you know, and I pride on the user experience, and I just thought it was all over the place. And then when it said this was produced by Microsoft, I was like, oh, okay, yeah,
makes
sense.
The last thing I wanted to say on this, going back to the gripping and you know, using the real world type of 3D. Motion to control user interfaces, I find that extremely intriguing. I wish that this article, I was disappointed the article didn't give examples of how that could actually be applied to a computer interface. And I guess Microsoft Kinect is the most logical thing you can think of
It's flawed. The Kinect is flawed, though. And the one thing, the reason why is because you need such a huge space. You know, I see these adverts on TV for the Kinect, and it's like, that's all good and well. But you don't advertise the fact that you need to have at least 8 meters clear from the Kinect sensor itself. I used to have one, and I got rid of it because it's like, I don't have a big enough space to use it. You know, the technology is flawed in that way. So it's like, you know.
Let's move on to our second article. Apple pushes back sandboxing deadline as devs struggle with trade-offs, posted by Adam Brown. So Lion, the latest version of Mac OS 10, it implements a whole new sandboxing API. It's something they kind of had in Leopard. Now they've made it full-blown in Lion. And if you're going to sell your app in the App Store, the original deadline was going to be November 1st of 2011, that your app would have to sandbox itself and use the proper sandbox APIs, which they call entitlements, so that to try to do anything outside of the app sandbox. Like open up files or print or network or any number of functions. This is something that the browser world has been used to for a long time, and mobile developers, like iOS developers, have been used to this because both browsers and mobile devices have been sandboxed pretty much from the beginning. So now the desktop is getting the sandboxing, and what they were finding is that the developers were saying, we can't get our stuff ready by November 1st. We need more time. So they pushed it back to March. But what I want to talk about for a minute, Brandon, is just the overall concept of sandboxing. And if you think this is something good to have on the desktop.
You know, my take is that Apple, you know, again, we all know that Apple likes to control absolutely everything. And if they want to make this thing so it's super, super popular, then sandboxing is going to keep it safer for the common person. So in that case, I think the App Store is going to be good for my mother. It's going to be good for, you know, for the older folks. I probably, unless I was going after that market, I wouldn't release it through the App Store is what it comes down to. You're always able to go and design and develop your applications. It's going to run just fine, but you have to find a different marketing avenue because that's just not going to be the market where, you know, unless it fits within, you know, the model that Apple wants.
Right. Well, first, apps that may not work well with sandboxing, the best example I've seen so far is FTP. So something like Transmit, which is a very popular FTP program for the Mac, it needs to have full access to your file system, or at least it needs to be able to show, you know, folders worth of files in a view for you.
Well, yeah.
With sandboxing, the way it's currently implemented, there are only a few API methods for you, and you have to call to the sandboxing, you know, out through the entitlement saying, I want to allow a user to open a file or save a file. You can't right now just say, I want to show this file system to the user. Yeah. It doesn't have that ability. Maybe more API methods will be coming in the future. But right now, it's actually kind of limited, and it is preventing certain apps from even being sold in the App Store.
Sure, sure. Yeah, so I'm not surprised by this. And I don't think anybody should be surprised by this. It's just they want to control that whole experience. And, you know, fine, as long as...
I think they want to get out ahead of any security malware issues. Now they're becoming such a popular platform.
Sure. You know, and but again, if for us hardcore people and people who like to fuck with our computers, you know, it's not a big deal to go to the website and download it.
For now. But these apps are signed that are in the App Store.
They can't sell it on their website as well. That's right.
Well, no, I mean, you could. You can compile the signed version for the App Store, and you could also just do your, you know, your regular version. But what I'm saying is that the Mac OS, you know, whatever, maybe, you know, whatever comes next or a couple of OSs down the road, maybe they don't allow non-signed apps to run on the OS.
Yeah, and then it's time for us to find a new operating system.
I think so.
Yeah, so and I have no problem with that. If that's the direction that they want to go to survive as a company, and they want to lose, you know, the creative folks who need all of that, then so be it. That's the decision they make, and hopefully, you know, BOS comes back or something.
Why does all sandboxing on the mobile device make sense, but it's not something you want to accept on the desktop?
Because it's a totally different device, right? So I'm in my Yeah, it's all about consumption on my phone and on my iPad. It's not about production. When I come to my computer, though, it's my tool that I'm using to create, and you don't fuck with that. You know, as long as I can get down and I can write and I can get to the fundamentals, and if I can't, then it's time to jailbreak the operating system if we have to, or whatever we need to do to be able to produce the art. So that's my take.
All right. Article number 3, vendor prefixes are hurting the web, posted by Marcos Zanona. What they're talking about here are the WebKit and the Moz CSS prefixes. This guy is saying there are some pretty detrimental effects of the browser companies using these prefixes. They use the prefixes because the CSS standard hasn't caught up to some of the features that they want to experiment with. So they just go ahead and throw it in there so that there's never a collision with what may come out in the standard in the future. They put the prefix in front of their CSS. But, and that sounds all well and good, and it's like, hey, use it if you want. Don't use it. Doesn't really matter. So what are some of the reasons why this guy is saying that this hurts the web? And first is he saying that this is bad for competition in the browser space. And the example he gives is that WebKit really has a monopoly on the mobile devices space. Almost every popular mobile phone today uses a WebKit-based browser. So it's extremely common to design towards WebKit and even use those WebKit prefix CSS features. You know, and sometimes people may not even want to put the Moz prefix in there.
Mm-hmm.
Down the road, when that is accepted as a standard, how likely is it that all these people that have used all of these prefixes are going to go back and update their code? It may be a project that they don't even have access to anymore, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you have all of this code sitting around, and it's designed specifically for WebKit. It creates a reason to stick with WebKit and may hamper Mozilla adoption in the mobile space, is one of the examples he gives.
I don't even use them anymore, prefixes.
So if it's something fancy that...
No, like, yeah, I mean, again, I can... Like, yeah, you can do your rounding. You can do your border radiuses.
Like gradients. Is gradient a standard?
Yeah, no, sure. It's not. I mean, yeah. So I have a Coda snippet that I use to generate my. So that is browser specific. Yeah. So you know, I think it sucks in that the standard needs to happen faster. The standards need the whole standards thing needs to happen at a significantly faster pace.
Right.
But I do. I think it's like, oh God, it's an awful thing. No, for the most part, everything I do is just, you get your border radius, you have your and your box shadow, you know, right. with just those two things, you can do some pretty amazing things. And both of them, I just say, you know what, if the browser's not supporting it yet, then they're not going to get it. And when the browser does support it, then they're going to get it. Cause it's, you know, again, it's a superficial thing.
Well, a big change with HTML5 is that it is a living spec.
Yeah. So
there's gone are the days of waiting 5 to 10 years for the new version to come out and for your browsers to catch up to that stuff. So
yeah.
The arguments he responds to here is that people were saying prefixes allow the web to move forward faster because you can just get that stuff in with no friction. You don't have to wait for W3C or any other web consortium to adopt this stuff. Doesn't have to be in the standard. Boom. You've just got it. You can start playing with it. And he gives an example of the canvas and the video tags in HTML5 as having been moved forward unprefixed. There was no need to prefix those things. They threw them in there. And they have iterated on that and looped through several iterations of it in the spec and in the browsers without having to do prefixes.
Yeah, okay, I agree.
All that code that was written, it didn't have to be updated. You didn't have to do these kludgy prefixes. It just, you know, that was a nice way to move things forward.
I know. I just have a hard time saying that if you're really stressing out about the fucking prefixes, then the product you're working on just really obviously isn't like that mind blowing.
Right.
Right. That like we have enough problems that we have to worry about that. You know, maybe writing another line of WebKit and Moz.
Well, and you bring up a good point there is that writing that, those extra lines.
Yes.
Sorry, Stephen. I'll let you finish.
My hand's up over here in the UK, except it's so dark here because it's nighttime. You can't freaking see it.
But all right. So last comment on this, and I'll let Stephen end it. People are creating abstraction layers like in SAS. We've talked about several times. Brandon, you've said, okay, well, maybe the one thing it could do for you is allow you to put that chunk of code in there to do all the different border radiuses. So now you're relying on these abstraction layers, which you know you don't really like, so that you can handle all these prefixes without having to write them over and over. So that is another possible negative to this.
Yeah. No. Again, I think, and I can't remember the CSS or the gradient one. I never can remember that one offhand. So that's why I have the snippet. But again, the other ones, I think, I don't use the prefixes, and eventually they're going to catch up.
All right, Stephen, you can finish it.
This is just one guy's opinion. The way I work is I use vendor prefixes when I need to. And the thing is I'm the kind of guy that wants everything to be perfect. So I'll go back and remove them if they're not used anymore. But it's like what Brandon just said, you design for the latest that's out. And then the older browsers, when they catch up, or when people update them, and obviously when what have you, and when the browsers catch up with the technology, then all this good stuff will be there ready and waiting. So I don't really think that the vendor prefixes are hurting the web. They're just a means to an end to put the latest stuff in the browsers, because at the end of the day, I think the mutual agreement here is that the browsers need to they need to be pushed out faster and support things faster.
I would agree with that.
So they need to unify instead of it being fragmented, So boom. And in other words, just go frigging WebKit. Stop with Gecko. Stop with whatever the frig Internet Explorer uses. I can't even remember now because my mind's gone blank. Too much Pepsi, I think. There you go. It's not even important. WebKit. Right. End. Next article.
All right. Article number 4. Expanding. Thanks for the segue there. That was pretty smooth. Expanding text areas made elegant, posted by Ryan Cox. This is on
Coxy Money on Twitter. We need to talk about Ryan just like a couple times, because if we do, he'll hear it and then he'll tweet it and he'll Facebook it and he'll send it out to all of his little. He'll completely.
How about this?
Yeah, but he's gonna get a big
this article. This article was submitted by Ryan Cox. There you go. Retweet it, man. Boom.
All right, so expanding text areas, it's a great article and a list apart. If you've ever had to do an expanding text area, which is like what Facebook does and a lot of other popular sites, where when you start typing into the small text area, when you go over just the few lines that it can display, then it will do some nice little animation and just slide that guy down, make your text area a little taller for you to type the rest of the text in. And if you've tried doing this, it's not necessarily a walk in the park. There are a couple of different ways to do it, but unfortunately, there's no native support in HTML or CSS for doing this, so you're going to have to use some JavaScript. And if you're a JavaScript ninja like Brandon, then you can do this in your sleep. But there are a couple of jQuery plugins. So I tried like 3 different jQuery plugins for this, Brandon. Seriously. So, I like my plugins.
Yeah.
Probably could sit down and write this. After reading this article, looking at some of the browser compatibility issues and stuff, I still, even after looking at this, if somebody can do this in a jQuery plugin, please do it, and I will just use that.
But so say,
I tried these three different plugins. I don't remember their names right now, but each of them seemed to have certain issues as to knowing when to expand, when to contract again, when to show the scroll bar. They kind of cut off. They were too close to that bottom line of text. One or two of them were. They all had an issue with them. And I've tried the demo in a couple of browsers on this article, and it works. And it works nicely. Now, there's no nice little expansion animation when it expands. It just expands, but it works. So if you're going to
stick some CSS, I would recommend that's gonna be doing amazing.
This. Do what? A little CSS animation?
Oh, yeah. And cool. Just a little heads up for the article Origin, which is a list apart. They just write some awesome stuff. In fact, just so people know.
This is more CSS than JavaScript, though.
It is. And you have to do some specific browser-based, you know, you have to detect which browser it is and do a little different stuff.
And just to let people know, this is the website, right, where responsive web design written by Ethan Marcotte, that original article just started from. So there you go. Nice. A bit of a history lesson.
Congratulations.
So, Brandon, have you run into problems when you did your expanding text areas, or did you find it, you just kind of like went through it and it worked?
Yeah, no, again, you know, it always takes time to do it, but it was a fun project. I did it for Picky List, which was a local social media thing I built long time ago. But yeah, you know, they're mainly what they've really done is they've made their CSS just really, really succinct, and they do have their, you know, box sizing, border box and Moz, and there's your MS and all that. But yeah, it's literally 20 lines of JavaScript that, you know, where they're just putting the event listener. I do like that it's not framework specific, so it should work just across, you know, regardless of what you're
that is nice.
What you're working on. But yeah, it's more about the CSS to make it look perfect. And then, you know, they do have their IE8. When I built mine, the IE7 was the only thing that was out.
Well, and it uses a hidden pre off on the side, and then you're actually typing into that, and then it's putting that into the text area. Right? So that's kind of, is that how you did yours? Did you just do it?
No, mine had a lot more JavaScript to make the height accurate.
Okay.
Yeah, but so mine definitely was not as elegant as this. This is, you know, very elegant.
If you had to do it again, would you use this?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Excellent. That's what I'm thinking too. I bookmarked this, and if I ever do something like, you know, if I ever do an expanding text area in the future, I'd just do this.
Yeah.
So for anybody interested in doing that, just check this out. Article number 5, Hackers Hiring Hackers. It's a website called gun.io, and this was posted by Arlo Carrion. He'll have to do some more posts over the next week so we can mention him again. So gun.io, what is this thing? It is a project website. Not, you know, it's a way for developers, if you're working on a project where you could use a little bit of help, you can reach out to other developers via gun.io. You can state what it is, the little piece that you want them to work on, how much money you're willing to pay for it, and hopefully find a competent developer to help you out in a time of need. So it's the first site that I've seen where you can list jobs and little freelance work that's developer to developer. What do you guys, Brandon, would you ever use something like this?
I would consider it.
What do you guys, Brandon?
Yeah, because I had to stop myself because I always find myself just leading in with the, I kind of think it's, you know, kind of like a gimme, like, all right, what do you guys think of this? But, you know, I'm trying to ask better questions now in our podcast, so more directed, like, all right, would you use this? Do you think this is good? So that's
I would try it out maybe. On some of my smaller ones just to see what could happen. But yeah, it's cool. I mean, I like the angle that they're taking with it. And, you know, there's a lot of freelance and job boards. So it's a pretty crowded market. And what I think they're doing is taking a different angle on it. So I hope it succeeds.
Price-wise, it's pretty small. Add table support to Etherpad Lite is one that they have on the homepage for $196. And they have an open source bounty. Add security flaw fixing features to Whitespace bot for $50. So cool. I mean, it's not a lot of money to have to do these things. I don't know who's accepting these jobs or the quality of the people or anything, but I like it at face value.
Yeah, it all comes down to it's a chicken and the egg. You know, they got to bring both the buyers and the since they're hitting the same individual for their market, they very well could solve that problem.
It could. Yeah. I like it. All right, next article. Gradient app for OS X, the missing link between web designers and colors, posted by Ben Pruitt. This is an app that you have used before, right, Steven?
Yes, I use it. I use it literally daily.
Tell us why it's so great. Why is this an invaluable tool?
It's great because Well, it says in the name, it creates gradients for you, but it's the fact that the UI for this app is so super simple. So basically use a color swatch, or you can put in the CSS. But yeah, the color swatch is super simple. If, for example, you're in fireworks or whatever, and you want to create a gradient, and you can, using the buttons, you you can change which direction you want the gradients to go in. And then quite simply, as soon as you've got everything right and that's the gradient you're looking for, simply just hit the copy button and you've got all the code there. It works in all the, you know, literally every browser. It's got all the code in there. Now, the code is, you know, it's quite big because obviously it needs to render on all browsers.
But it's got the vendor prefixes.
Yeah, but boy, is it super simple. And, you know, it just works. They've taken that whole ethos, it just works, and they've made it super simple. So you're not there typing for ages and getting this whole gradient looking right and what have you. It is amazing. It really is just an invaluable tool in my arsenal of tools.
I like this, that little search button. You press that and you're zoomed into the pixel level to select exactly the color
you want.
That's pretty sweet.
It's just amazing for creating like form elements and anything that you need a gradient with. And I just think if more apps like this could come out that could cater for different things, different type, because this really is catering for CSS3 stuff and CSS3 usage. And if we could get more of these types of apps, that'd just be amazing. And I'm really looking forward to the company behind this app, if they ever do delve into other things in the future. Jump Zero and dude, awesome. If you're a designer, you need to be using this, if you're using gradients and stuff, because it's just super easy, super simple, and well worth it. Well worth the download because it's free.
All right. Next article is Demise of Mobile Flash May Accelerate Growth of Mobile Web, posted by Melanie Archer. Is Flash dead, guys?
Yes. Next.
So here's the announcement for people that don't already know. Adobe came out and said, we are not going to build any more versions of Flash for mobile devices. We will support the versions we've already built. We're going to do bug fixes and security fixes, into the near future. But nothing new is going to be coming out. They're not walking away from Flash as a whole, though. They are still doing Flash stuff on the desktop. So this is really on the mobile side. And actually, I found it strange, but RIM said that they are going to continue to use Flash as a differentiator for themselves. And they're going to do that by continuing to develop their own mobile Flash player technology.
That's just stupid. No. It is. It really is stupid.
Do you remember when Adobe said, this is like 3 years ago now, Adobe said that they were going to build Flash for mobile devices and it would run well, and there was no real reason why it couldn't run well on a mobile device. They're really acting like, Apple didn't know what it was talking about. Why were these guys saying that Flash wasn't a good experience?
A lot of people thought that, I don't know. You look at Microsoft. Steve Ballmer said, "What would people want with a phone without buttons?" And you obviously look now, and they're pioneering their own touchscreen OS, mobile OS, and all that. So, people do think that somebody's made a decision. Look, we're not going to use this technology anymore because we think it's not going to work. A lot of people do jump to conclusions and think, well, they don't know what they're talking about. So, but I definitely see this as, it's good Adobe's doing this because they're wasting resources and their own money in developing a platform that really is just, it's wanning, or wanning, however you pronounce the word in my accent. But with the likes of HTML5 and JavaScript and all good, and all that good stuff, we really don't need Flash anymore. So good move, Adobe, but, just totally get rid of everything Flash.
All right, Brandon, I'm curious to know why you think Adobe is killing off mobile Flash.
I don't know. Because everybody shit on it, and it was giving them a bad look. So
it works
on
Android, doesn't it?
It works on
Blackberries.
Not really. It works,
what do you mean,
but it
not really.
that that everything that's built is meant to be built with a pointer. And right. and so you don't have that when you have the phone or the touch devices. So it never really worked 100%. And so I think it makes sense. It's like, okay, that's fine. Let's say it's not going to work on mobile. Let's focus on the. I think the Air runtime is actually a great platform. They're putting the Flex SDK into the open source community. They're still, I think, waiting to figure out who they're going to contribute it to. So I think they're doing some good stuff. And I still think Flash as a development environment is really is pretty interesting, but I'm glad that they're going to stop. Like let's focus on what the technology could be good for, and that's write once, deploy on five different platforms.
Right.
At the end of the day, I think like Adobe, Adobe is like if you're going to be designing something, you're going to be using an Adobe product maybe to use it, and likewise to develop, people would use Dreamweaver or like if they're doing print design or like if they even if they're doing Flash, obviously they're using, doing animation, they're using Flash and that good stuff. It's good to know that Adobe with that kind of level of with that kind of clout that they have in the whole creative industry, it's good to know that they're actually admitting, look, this isn't working, let's put our resources into something else, which I think we spoke about this, didn't we, on a previous, I can't remember the app name, but they're doing like a HTML5 animation app, aren't they? So
yep.
So there's a good use of their time, and it would be good to just see that take over Flash and eventually see the end of Flash, because that's the way I think things are going. So, and it's good, like I just said, it's good to see Adobe nipping it in the bud and moving on and to do what's best.
I applaud them for that, for realizing it and not, riding this ship down to the bottom of the ocean. They've switched gears and they're going HTML5 all the way.
Yeah, I mean, I was just reading here on that bit on Rim where they want to use that as a platform differentiator. That's just bizarre, isn't it?
Differentiate them. Maybe just not in a
good way. Yeah, it will differentiate them into the fact that they will be bankrupt and the other companies won't.
All right, let's get to the last article here. We're not meeting our goal, unfortunately, this week of doing a podcast in 40 minutes. I don't know if this is a realistic goal or not, but this last article is something I really wanted to get to. Head.js, a tiny script that speeds up your site. This was posted by Tony Brown. And Brandon, you've used this library before, right?
Oh, sorry. Yes, I have.
Could you walk us, just kind of tell our listeners what it does and why sure. you've used it before?
No, it's a great way. When we start having all these libraries and all these different frameworks and plugins, we start having just this ridiculously large head tag that has all the scripts in it. And what happens is as those loads, they load sequentially. So ding, 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 ding. What Head.js will do is it's going to load them all in parallel. So they'll start downloading at the same time in a faster fashion. I used it on... I think I tried to use it on my blog and try to get it to work with WordPress, and that didn't work very well. But I did it on a couple of my own freestanding ones, and it's nice. It's good to do it. Now, what's hard is you have to take into consideration, like when you do write some scripts, sometimes you will take into consideration that this one is actually going to be loaded while this one's not. And so now if your scripts do have, or any of the plugins or anything that you have does rely on that, then you do have to kind of, identify when to trigger certain ones and things like that. So, I think the guy did a good job, and it's worth checking out to see if it fits in your project or not. The guy says that in some cases that it's, I didn't read this article to be honest with you, but Jared said it, that he says that sometimes it's better to do it this way than to actually minify and load it all up in one. That one I still question, because realistically, less code at is least, less code.
At least the site looks good, so... Yeah. Kudos to the designer.
Yeah. Well, but yeah, definitely check it out.
Yeah, I am personally going to test out at some point here in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to test that claim. And I know it's probably different based on how many files you're talking about and specific conditions, but I want to know if it makes more sense to have my 5 JavaScript files load in parallel using head.js, or should I really just combine them all and minify them and do it that way? Like, it seems the conventional wisdom says I should do.
Yeah,
because if I don't have to do that, then to me that's a big win, because I do keep my JavaScript files broken out into different, I use multiple files. I like to to put this in this right file and this one in this other file named this. And, you know, I do enjoy having stuff broken out. So not, you know, I don't want to look at one file that has all put together in it.
Yeah. See, and I'm more of, I like to have one main file, that has like everything in it just kind of broken down, but then minify right. on the fly and cache.
minimize.
Well, and he brings that up too. He says that way, if you're doing multiple little files and you only change one of them, the others still stay cached. So there is that aspect to it as well.
Yeah. So really, it could be. I didn't do any kind of benchmarking, so I'll be interested to see what your findings are.
And you can also, looking at the doc here, it says you can load files in parallel but execute them in sequence.
Yes.
So kind of a cool little feature there.
Ooh.
Well, that about wraps up this episode of the Talentopoly podcast.
You can check us out on our RSS feed.
Or you can subscribe to us on Instacast or iTunes.
And check us out on Twitter at Talentopoly.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.